Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the Best People We Know radio show. This is where you'll meet experts and celebrities who share their success secrets with you to help you be your most successful best too. Your host, Deb Scott, is a certified professional coach at Discover the Amazing You Coaching and author of the award-winning motivational book, The Sky is Green and the Grass is Blue, Turning Your Upside-Down World Right Side Up. The Best People We Know radio show brings you powerful resources, effective ideas, and transformational tools you can use to educate, inspire, and motivate you to be your most purposeful, peaceful, happy best. So get ready to experience mind vitamins to feed your whole soul. Good change is about to happen. The Best People We Know radio show. Here's your host, Deb Scott.
Hey, everybody. How are you today? Well, I'm great because I'm here with you, and I love this. I have the best job in the world, being with the best people I know, and that would be us. So whether you're listening live or on replay, we appreciate you, and do share us with a friend. Marcus is a favorite. Be sure to follow us and get those worry-free updates for shows, and just be your best. And today is all about being your best with Sue Jakes. Now, if you're like me, one of the things that you have to do in being your best is act that way, think that way, feel that way, and you have to treat others with respect, and you need to be treated with the respect that you deserve, too. And I think that sometimes in the fast-paced world that we live in, we forget how to be civil because Sue Jakes is the civility CEO. And she goes around the country teaching people, businesses, corporate environments, individuals, you know, how to really express themselves in a positive way. And in return, we can expect that and set that standard high so that we perform at our best and feel our best. So I am excited that you're here. We're going to learn a lot. And I'm going to read Sue's bio, and then we'll take your calls at 347-637-1318, or you can type them up in the chat room. But Sue is the civility CEO. And what is that? And she's going to tell us more about that. But she's a corporate etiquette consultant. She's a professional speaker and an executive image mentor who helps individuals and companies gain confidence, earn respect, and create courteous corporate cultures. As a leader in the civility movement, Sue is a change mentor whose mission is to enlighten and inspire individuals from all walks of life and empower them to embrace civility and respect as guiding principles. Prior to becoming the civility CEO, Sue served over 18 years as a forensic death investigator. Wow. Now, that is a definite reinvention of the career at the Office of the Chief Medical Examiner. During her career in forensics, she was personally involved in the hands-on medical investigation of over 5,000 deaths. Most of them were very violent and unexpected. Sue learned firsthand from that experience about the value of life and the power of respect and civility. Sue has been speaking, writing, and facilitating workshops about professionalism and corporate courtesy since 2000. She's been a guest on Oprah's Radio, The Gayle King Show, and is a segment host on the syndicated television program Man on a Mission. Whether she's working with an individual, a team, an audience, or a company, Sue has a knack for inspiring respect, grace, and confidence. Her mission is to reverse rudeness, and her personal motto is simple: when in doubt, choose kindness. And you can check out Sue's wonderful website and see her beautiful face there, the Civility CEO, all one word, .com. Hi, Sue. It's so great to have you with us today.
Hi, Deb. Thank you so much for inviting me to be a guest on your fabulous program. Let's have some fun.
Fun is always a good thing. Fun and function together. It's like, you know, something that never goes out of style. So I do love that. I mean, you give us a lot of firsthand experience to really think about, because not only did you reinvent your career, but you really built on your skill set to maximize your gifts, to help others maximize theirs. you know, there's so many different questions. Maybe the first thing to ask is, how did you transition from, you know, working in forensics into building this business doing what you're doing?
Deb, that's a question I get so often because it sounds to people like it's such a leap, such a change in career. And I can see that perspective. However, from my point of view, what began happening as I was investigating these violent and unexpected deaths was I started seeing or realizing, understanding in my heart that our actions really do have consequences. And it matters how we treat ourselves, and it matters how we treat one another. And I realized that I was witnessing and part and being part of the, in many cases, the ultimate results of disrespect. And it occurred to me over time, this was a real philosophical journey, it occurred to me over time that perhaps through my unique experience, I could turn that into a message to help people understand that we have choices in how we treat ourselves and one another and how to turn those into positive choices at home and at work.
Wow. Yeah, that, you know, I really think that people today, especially as we get a little bit older, sometimes we want to change careers, change jobs, do something different. But what you've done is take what you were good at, what you were passionate about, and then build on it to be even better and help other people be better. And I really think that that's a testimony for all of us. Anybody listening right now, if you're thinking, you know, I want to do something else, listen to what Sue did and, you know, get in touch with her and learn from others so that, you know, you can embrace your greatness. Civility, what does that mean today in our culture, especially since it's so fast-paced and it seems like people have forgotten to treat people like people?
Civility is a word that is really gaining popularity and coming into the forefront of our conversations these days. To me, civility is really a synonym for respect. I believe that civility is a philosophy that we can adopt to address our colleagues, our family, our community, and ourselves with respect and understanding. And civility, really, to me, in fact, I believe that corporate civility is the new currency. I think that in our post-recession society, we are going to have a different set of values, and companies that embrace the idea of corporate civility are going to soar to success, and the result of that is enhanced employee well-being, and I also believe that it's going to...
We got a little Beju baby barking at the neighborhood dogs, even though everything's been moved out there. So just a little bit of a flavor in there for the live radio. Yeah, we have. That's not too civil.
Well, he's got something to say. He wants to add to the conversation.
Yeah, that's okay. Well, we're going to get them. We're going to get them under control here, and they're going to be okay. But you know, I think that's you know, it's important to get the definition down. And I'm going to let you take it one step further and talk about, you know, some of the things that civility isn't.
Well, I think the first thing that civility is not is a buzzword. I think it's going to be easy to look at it as a buzzword, and you know, people are getting tired of it. Somebody I saw recently wrote they were tired of hearing the word civility because to them it meant manners, like rules and regulations. And I don't believe that. I believe civility is about character and conduct, not rules and regulations. I believe that it's a philosophy that is about kindness, how we look at the world, how we treat one another.
So why do people think that you can, you know, hire somebody for their hands to do a job, say, and forget that there's a mind and a person attached to it? Why do we forget that the very thing that we're seeking to attain, which is dedicated work, commitment, loyalty, enthusiasm, creativity, you know, 110%. Why do we expect to get that when we do everything opposite to nurture it and keep it strong?
Well, I think sometimes we get focused on the product or the process or, excuse me, the schedule, and we get wound up in how are we going to get this stuff done, and we lose track of the human side of that process. So to get back to involving humans as humans in our workplace or in our community lives takes, I think, an opportunity for us each to look at ourselves first and to remember how we feel when we are treated certain ways and reflect upon that when we choose to treat other people in ways that may have made us felt bad. It's all about ourselves. One of the things I ask my clients to do all the time is whenever they pass by a mirror throughout their workday, is stop and glance in that mirror and look at themselves for just a minute and say, would I want to be working with me right now?
Because that's a good question.
Because we focus so much on what everybody else is doing and how cranky that person is and how slow that person is and how, you know, the other person's attitude sucks. But really, the only one we can change is our own. So to look in the mirror and say, would I want to be working with me right now? If you can't wholeheartedly say, absolutely, I would be a blast to work with right now. I'm efficient. I'm professional. I'm getting to it. If you can't say yes to that, then you need to change your attitude so that others can change theirs. That's how we affect change at work.
Yeah, it's like, you know, don't expect somebody else to get along with you if you can't get along with yourself, you know?
Absolutely.
Really,
you're right.
You have to get it on the, you know, work on the inside out. Well, you know, let's just, somebody listening right now may be thinking, you know, okay, this sounds really great. I want to work in a civil environment. I appreciate that you've defined it. I want to be in a family that's civil. I want to be in a work environment that's civil. I want to be in a neighborhood, a community that's civil. But, you know, I have a gossiper, and boy, it's hard to be civil to that gossiper. Can you tell us something about how to deal with people who gossip and how to make sure that we don't, you know, fall into that same trap, because two wrongs don't make a right?
No, you are so right there, Deb. Gossip is infectious, and it's rampant, and it is incredibly destructive, and it's omnipresent. It is everywhere, and you and I both know that, and so does every person listening. The word gossip begins with the letters G-O, and I believe that we can stop gossip if we get up and go when it begins. So even if you're not part of the conversation, just by simply listening, staying in the same room and listening, that is part of the whole gossip cycle. So in my professional opinion, what I advise clients to do, and this is a tough one, this is a real tough one to do, is to not make a big fanfare about it, but simply excuse yourself from the conversation if that's possible. Now, if that's not possible, and it isn't always possible, I also advise people and believe that it's okay to stand up for the person who's being spoken about, but you have to be careful how you do that. So I suggest that, let's say somebody was talking about you, Deb, and I was in the room and you weren't. I would have no problem with a smile on my face saying, look, I think Deb needs to be part of this conversation because this is something that she would probably know a lot more about than we do. So let's wait till we can have this conversation with her here.
Isn't that lovely? Chisley is in the chat room. She's going, I like that. Go when gossip begins. You know, I mean, go when gossip, you know, that really is something that we almost have to train ourselves to do. And I think, you know, to go back to your mirror analogy, you know, walking by, would I want to work with me today? It's almost as though it wouldn't hurt to practice saying that, you know, in front of the mirror if we have to. You know, Deb's not here being part of the conversation. I think that we should not discuss that until, and, you know, and training ourselves to get in the practice to make it a natural, good habit. How do you help people make it commonplace in their life when this comes up?
Well, I think one of the things we can do from a sort of a big business perspective, from a corporate perspective, and that, remember, these days many of us are solopreneurs. We are sole business owners, and other people on the call or in our lives might be, you know, moguls that have multi-billion-dollar global companies. I think the thing is about expectations. The word expectations is a big word in my vocabulary because I think it's we get to define what our standards and expectations are as human beings, and businesses need to have the gumption, the guts, to define what their expectations are. And I encourage individuals and businesses to declare, and I mean seriously, declare themselves as gossip-free zones, as respect-filled places of work. And I think that by declaring that, that enables some people who may not know how to express their voice of respect, it enables them to be able to say, hey, everybody, remember, this is a gossip-free workplace. And that kind of sounds like gossip. So let's move on from that and have a respectful discussion. Now, I know that may sound kind of airy-fairy, but seriously, it does work. I encourage people to put up signs, gossip-free work zone.
Mm. And they're good, I call them successful sabotage reminders, because it reminds us, it gives us that hook that, you know, no, this is something that is not an acceptable standard, or this is something that I'm working to achieve, and, you know, it keeps us focused on the things that are important to us, because it's easy to get distracted with all the social media that's on around us, and it's just constant. It just never ends. And speaking of social media, you talk about this in your work, and I think that people listening would be interested in this. Cell phones, electronic devices, you know, when and how do we use them appropriately? And I'm going to tell you, I mean, I'll see kids in church texting, you know, the person sitting next to them. And, you know, it's just, there is no place, it seems, that cell phones and electronic gadgets are not with us. So what could you tell us about that?
Well, my first piece of advice when it comes to electronic communication, particularly cell phones and smartphones and iPads and all those things that we all have become accustomed to now, we have to realize they're not going anywhere. So how do we work with them? It's like the technological highway has been paved, but we forgot to put the road signs up. So nobody knows what the rules are. Therefore, we have to express our own. So I think that when you are in the presence of another person or people, that your eye contact belongs to them out of respect rather than a little screen. Because a little screen isn't going to notice if you're not looking at it, but a human being is. So it's about making the choice, the deliberate choice, to put those things away because they're so distracting. And when we are in places of worship, when we are in meetings, when we are driving, when we are in a restaurant, a theater, a public place, an airport lounge, you know, be aware of our surroundings. And so often, there's a thing now called half-versations. We're hearing half-versations everywhere we go. We're hearing one half of somebody's conversation, and we're filling in the rest, presuming what's going on the other side of the call.
Wow, half-versations. Jeez, I hadn't heard that yet, but isn't that true? Seems like we're in an era where there's, people just create words and terms and verbiage. It's too funny. But that's a good one, and it really gives a great visual. And I wonder if people forget that the only one they're hurting in this is themselves, because I know, you know, writing a lot about motivational speaking and things like that, there's more to be learned in nonverbal communication.
Absolutely.
Than the verbal, if you want to call text or that verbal. But, it, you know, really it's the inflection in the voice, it's the look in the eyes, it's the facial expressions. And how can we truly understand? How can we really connect? How can we learn if we're missing that whole component that's giving us the information we need to truly understand? I mean, we're only hurting ourselves in that way.
We are, and I have a program called The Business of Body Language, where I help people understand just how loudly our body speaks. Sometimes people don't even hear what we're saying because our body is saying something completely different. And so we have to be aware of that, to stand with confidence, to keep our hands free and not like in our pockets or bundled up in crossed arms. It may feel comfortable to us, but we need to really be aware of how we're coming across to others. Sometimes we don't know how we come across to others. So what I recommend is for all of us, and more than once, periodically, find someone whose opinion you value, who knows will be honest with you, and ask them. Ask them how you're coming across with your tone of voice, with your nonverbal language, with your eye contact, with your smile. Does it help or hinder your sort of your image. And I think a good friend or a great colleague or an invested boss or partner will share with you perhaps something you can do. Here's one thing. A lot of people, myself included, don't know that we have some maybe habits that distract from our level of professionalism or confidence. Things like clicking of the pen, shaking of the knee, twirling of hair, chewing gum. It can be a very huge distraction for others when they want to converse with us when we are unknowingly sort of driving people nuts.
Yeah, it's like, hey, I can't hear what you're saying because your actions are speaking so loudly.
Yeah.
You know, there's that truth in what the person is doing, and yeah, all those signs, and I think that's something else that really gives us a wake up call that being present. Fully present in our conversation is really the key that unlocks the door to being truly civil, as you would describe You know, go ahead.
I was just going to say, and we're in a world of multitasking, and it's affecting our relationships.
Yeah, and it's just gotten to be too much. I want to talk about punctuality because I think that, you know, many of us have always, you know, some of us have been late at different times, but we all probably have someone in our life that's, you know, the chronic, super-duper late person. You know, Elizabeth Taylor just passed away, and she had them at her funeral, you know, wait 15 minutes because she was always 15 minutes late to everything. So, you know, it's just a little pithy thing that I heard somebody talking about. Maybe I saw it on Twitter. You know, Twitter, everybody's got something going on there.
That's right.
But, you know, I thought, okay, well, I have some personal perceptions on her having 15 minutes before they put her in the ground in silence because she was almost 15 minutes late. But I wanted to just get to a question we had in the chat room by Jay Blair. And she comments, I think businesses are far too focused on the bottom line. So often the troubled person is the poisonous fruit, but because they bring in the big bucks, you know, maybe they're exempt from having to, you know, to focus on their bad behavior. Do you see that in businesses, or do you have any comments on that?
I do see that, and I've had people bring that same point up to me. So thank you, Jay Blair. That's a really great question. It's like a double standard. And I was doing a presentation once to a company about their dress policy and how they were going to change it because nobody was respecting it anyway, so they wanted to change it. And so my point to them was we need to start, you know, this has to be everybody. It can't just be an us and a them. The higher-ups do it one way and the staff do it a different way. It has to be all of you. And the person said to me, well, my rainmaker, he said, I don't care what he wears to work because he makes the most money from anyone else in the firm. And I said, but that's not fair. If your expectations have to be consistent across the board. So if it's your rainmaker who's bringing in more money than anybody else, they really need to still be expected to behave, show up, communicate with the same level of respect as everybody else.
So really there are, you know, being unfair or being fair, that's just something that, you know, we've really forgotten because of money. So, you know, it really is something that we have to reflect on because nobody's going to be in a safe environment that's going to motivate them if they don't feel safe that they're being treated fairly. And it's just really amazing to me that companies think that they can act that way or anybody acting that way and expect to get a positive result from their bad action. Why do people do that? Just because of, as you said, the money or you know, that they themselves don't mind being treated unfairly?
Well, excuse me, I think it's another double-edged sword. I think it's about the bottom line, and that's a reality for business people. There is a bottom line, and the bigger the bottom line, the happier, you know, the bank account. But I also believe that we can look at this differently, and that is through the eyes of loyalty. It costs a lot of money to go through staff, And if you have happy staff who feel valued and respected, they're much more likely to stay. And when they're happy and respected, they're much more likely to want to come to work with a great attitude, do good work, and then affect the bottom line in a more productive way. Instead of through the, you know, grit teeth, oh, geez, here we go, I've got to make my sales, they can do it because they want to enhance the bottom line, because they feel part of something that they are valued in. And I think that simple turn in attitude with businesses is going to be imperative. It started, and I think it's going to be imperative, because as customers and as employees and as colleagues, we need to feel, we expect now to be treated fairly, with respect and with value, because the tables have been a little bit imbalanced for a while, and our values have changed because we value money differently now, and we value each other differently now, and more than anything, with all we're seeing going on in the world as a result of disrespect, we're valuing civility more.
Jay Blair is making another great comment. It just builds an environment of distrust, and you're never going to get trusting people to work for you in an environment with distrust. And I think, you know, especially now, I mean, we've seen it so much in the, you know, politicians and corporate catastrophes and, you know, everywhere. It just seems as though you can't trust anyone. And look at Madoff and all of these Ponzi schemes. I mean, you know, you think you're safe and you're getting something that by normal standards would all seem credible and authentic, and you just don't know who you can trust. And I think some of these sociopaths have gotten so good at their body language that it's, unless you're an FBI agent, it's almost hard to tell who's real from who's counterfeit, because they're so good at their game of being whatever they are in any area, distrusting people. I mean, they just make a career out of it.
They do, and it's funny because we do become distrustful. We don't know who to trust anymore. Sometimes, you know, because once bitten, twice shy, that saying will go on forever. We put our trust in someone. I know I've had this happen to myself. I sort of gain trust in someone. I'm like, okay, they're a good person. I can read people. You know, I've figured this guy out, and I believe what he's saying, and I'm going to go for whatever it is they were selling or producing or whatever. And then you get stung, and it's like, man, who can I trust anymore? And so I think we really have to become selective and inquisitive and inquiring about who it is we are doing business with or sharing time with, so that we know that the people we are sharing our thoughts, ideas, time, and love with are people who will value the effort we put into that.
Yeah, you have to really look at the actions, and sometimes they can build up a good reputation, but eventually it comes crashing down.
Yeah.
But, you know, one of the behaviors that you talk about looking at is punctuality. Tell us about that.
Well, punctuality. I know there's, I believe there's kind of two troops in the world, those who are late and those who are on time. And punctuality to me comes down to feeling, really. So I put the question out to you, and we've all felt both of these feelings, but the question is, how do you feel when you're about to be late? And you know, even if you're a punctual person, how do you feel when you know you're going to be late?
Well, I don't feel good when I know I'm going to be late. I have to call the person and let them know or apologize or, you know, I mean, I've eaten enough humble pie to get used to the flavor.
Yeah. And then the next question is, how do you feel when you're waiting for someone who's always late?
Well, you know, I have to say, I usually don't get upset because I think, did something happen to them? Mm-hmm. Are they okay? Mm-hmm. You know, that's usually my first instinct, because I worry about people's health and welfare. But, you know, I usually, and maybe this isn't typical, I usually don't get too upset, but I probably should be more upset.
Well, it's not about being upset. I just think it's natural when there's somebody who's always late, even if it's a colleague or an appointment that you go to your doctor or dentist or lawyer or whatever it is, and they're always behind. Waiting is an emotion. It causes emotion, as does the flurry of running so that you're on time. So I believe that punctuality is a choice. And in order to be on time, we need to make different choices. Excuses don't cut it any longer, because when we are late for something and other people have to wait, it affects their whole day, not just ours. So every time we're 5 minutes late, if there's five people waiting for us, we're affecting a whole bunch of other people's time. And I really do believe that it's up to us as individuals to be really realistic with our scheduling. So I have what I call the Civility CEO to-do list. And what that means to me is every time I put something in my calendar, I also put the time in to prepare for it or to get there. So, for example, let's say I'm preparing a presentation for next month, middle of April. Not only do I put the date of the presentation in, but I will also in my calendar put in the time that I'm going to prepare for it, and as well, above and below the appointment, I'm going to add in travel time, so that when the alarm comes up on my computer or my BlackBerry or I look in my day timer, I have a bigger chunk of time planned for the entire event, not just the time of the event, but the whole getting there, being prepared, and getting home, so that my time is really realistic.
Yeah, and that's a great suggestion, because it's always good to have a little, buffer in there to make sure that, you know, there's time to enjoy getting there, being there, waiting, you know, and obviously if we have someone in our life that's chronically late, what would you say to them?
Well, I think it's a great chance to have a really diplomatic, personal conversation. What some people will say is, oh, we just tell them to come, we just tell them a different time. Like my mom used to do that when my brother was born late and he never caught up, right? So when it was a...
Well, you're Elizabeth Taylor and proud of it, and that's why you're 15 minutes late at the funeral, too.
Well, what my mom would do is if it was a Sunday dinner, she'd tell all of us to be there at, say, 5 o'clock, and she'd tell my brother to be there at 4:30. And then maybe by 5 o'clock he'd actually be there. To me, that's just feeding the beast. That's not dealing with the issue. What I would recommend for people to do is say to the person, look, dinner's at 5 or the meeting's at 5, and if you're not here, we're going to begin without you. Same thing if
and
you're going
you
to...
Do, and then
you
come,
do.
And then they come, and then they're mad at you for doing what you said.
It's a matter of efficiency. I believe that sometimes what we end up doing, and meetings at work are a great example of this. People, you know, they have meetings. Everyone stops what they're doing. They go to the conference room. Everybody's waiting 5-10 minutes for somebody who's late. I believe instead to turn it around and out of respect for the people who are there on time, begin the meeting on time. Because only if it begins on time does it stand a chance of ending on time. And it needs to end on time so people can get back to what they were doing or get on to the next meeting. So this is not out of disrespect for the people who are running behind. It is out of respect for the people who are there and the efficiency of their day, of their time.
So let's take that one step further, and, you know, as I have that visual that we're in a meeting and that we're gathering in an event at a corporate environment, or perhaps we're giving a presentation for many listeners here, entrepreneurs, what would you tell us about corporate social events?
Like corporate hospitality things, networking parties, things like that?
Things like that, or anything that has to do with a gathering. Maybe it's, you know, the annual review, or maybe it's, you know, a presentation with a couple of different organizations, or maybe it's a trade show, or, you know, something where there's a large number of people involved, and for example, maybe somebody listening, you know, has a trade show to do, and they're concerned that they're going to have to meet with a lot of people, and they don't want to be rude, but there's a lot of people in one place that you have to deal with, and you need to do more than just show up. You actually have to communicate. You have to navigate. You have to think on your feet, and you want to present yourself in the most professional way, coming across with credibility, and, you know, also being thoughtful, and also, you know, unless you have a superhuman strength, it's hard to be all things to all people. So again, it gets back to that original thought of expectations.
Well, I think in those circumstances, it's important to know to come in with some very clearly defined goals. So to know when you're going to the event, whether you're hosting at a booth, or you want to go around and meet some colleagues and check out some new product and perhaps some new people, that go in with a real clear focus about what you want to come out with. So if there's a particular person or company that you'd like to meet or investigate, you know, find out ahead of time where they'll be in the trade show or at the event, and go with a specific notion that you are going to spend time with them, and navigate your way there so that you're not kind of distracted a lot throughout the event. And if it's even more general than that, let's say there's a corporate social event and you hate going to those things because there's so many people and you don't know how to, you know, approach everybody and feel out of your element, I think it's, again, important to go in with some really clearly defined expectations of yourself. So let's say you want to walk out with 5 business cards of potential contacts. Well, make that your goal. And it's not like you're, like, you know, going over to everybody, hey, can I have your card? Can I have your card? You need to develop a way to engage in conversation, know who to approach, let them listen to what they have to say, and end that conversation with a mutual exchange of cards that can take you to the next level and perhaps turn into a business opportunity.
Mm. And that really, that goes through that whole, and you work with a lot of people on image, and that whole image of being a professional and realizing that the way we dress, the way we, you know, as you said, use our body language to communicate, it really threads together. There's really no separation. They really are different elements in a big picture. Do you want to talk a little bit more about the image element of this, because you're so good at it, especially looking at the way you put things together on your website? Everybody, you have to go to Sue's website. It's absolutely beautiful, and it's also got some fabulous information, and you know, I just think that certainly if I look at somebody and I say, well, if they're not doing it in their own life, how can they possibly help me do it in mine? And I think that this is a nice segue, you know, towards that end, talking about this particular subject.
Well, thank you for your compliment to begin with. I really appreciate that. And I think that we need to understand who we are and how we wish to represent ourselves. And the way we do that is through our image. Now, when I speak about image, I'm not talking just about our physical image, you know, what we look like, how we groom ourselves or dress. I also talk about, and believe that it's equally important, our virtual image and our electronic image. You and I have never met, but we've corresponded and we feel like we know each other. Excuse me, because we have a certain tone to our conversation. But professional image is the one thing that is up to us to exude. And whether you wear a uniform or a suit or work boots and a hard hat, it's all about the level of respect that you are illuminating when you show up. So, you know, somebody can wear a suit, but it could be a crumpled suit, or it could not fit correctly. Excuse me, or it could be a dirty suit. So it's about, how am I going to put my best foot forward? Who am I? What do I look like? And how do I do that consistently? I believe that a professional image can be effortless. It's about finding yourself and being sincerely committed to putting your best self out there every day. So if you're not a girl who wears makeup and likes to wear, you know, slacks and a cardigan to work, cool. If that's great with your workplace, if that fits with respecting their work policy as far as clothing goes, great. It's not about getting all dolled up all the time. It's about putting your best foot forward, wearing clothing that fits, clothing that is clean, clothing that respects the dress policy at work. And I also believe that it's important to be aware of things like cleavage, you know? Cleavage can be a huge distraction at work, and nobody knows how to talk about it. They hire me to come into their place of work and talk about cleavage.
That is just unbelievable. But, you know, it really is important to remember that, you know, how we express ourselves is how we're going to be treated.
Yeah.
And if somebody's just out to show cleavage, then that's all they're saying that they're worth. Or, you know, we forget that, you know, first impressions and perception is reality.
And it really is. And I think there's something about being consistent. And that's what I mean, Deb, when I say that it becomes really natural. It can be effortless. Building a professional wardrobe takes time. I believe in investing in clothing that is of quality versus quantity. You can build a wardrobe by buying, as I'm speaking as a woman, if you buy a suit that has slacks, a jacket, and a skirt, you could be set forever. Because you can do so many different things by buying different accessories that will go with it. So when I'm working with people who are new to the workforce or who are in a new position, taking a suit, you can do a million different things with it. Separates also work. It's about coordinating your closet so that every day you can look in the closet and say, okay, this is easy. I'm going to put that on and this on and groom myself appropriately, make sure my shoes sort of look decent. Same with gentlemen. A suit can also become separates.
And if somebody doesn't pay, you know, attention to the details that are on them, again, you're not giving the message that you're going to pay attention to the details in their life or with the work or job that you're going to do with them. You know, I wonder if anybody's thinking, okay, this is great, I believe that all of these things are true, and I'm now aware, and I can change, and I can be aware of other people and how they're behaving, but I just have this real jerk at work. You know, I've got this jerk that is just a jerk, and all of these rules just will not apply to this particular person. What do you tell them? It's like, okay, now what?
Well, I hear you. And in every course I've ever presented and every person I've ever spoken to, 100% across the board, there's somebody, if not everybody, who's worked with a jerk, myself included. And that's a question I ask. I say, okay, everybody who's worked with a jerk, put your hand up. And most hands go up. So I'd like to share with you a little story, if I may, about a jerk that I worked with. And I'm now thankful for that person because working with that person changed my life quite dramatically. And he was like kind of like the bully at work. He was in a position of authority and just a real kind of scary guy to work with. He had no sort of, you know, those people who have kind of no filter between what they're thinking and what they say. And it was awful. Every day somebody was lambasted and it was terrible. And I was really deeply affected by this. And one day he came into my office and began spouting very, I don't know, disrespectful terminology about whatever the topic was at hand, and I got this incredible feeling of peace that came over me. It went from frustration and fear and anxiety to this incredible feeling of peace. And I remember looking at him, something came over me, I looked him square in the eye, and I said, we need to talk. And he got this look of fear in his eyes, and he said to me, do you think we could do it over the phone? And I said, no, let's just talk. And we sat down and had a conversation, probably for the first time in our lives, about how he was speaking to me and others, and he had no idea how he was coming across. That conversation freed me. Our relationship changed. I gained so much confidence as a result of that. Dealing with a jerk can be as simple as looking at them, either accepting the fact that they're going to be a jerk and you're never going to change them, or sitting down with them or asking them if they will sit down with you and have a conversation about how you're feeling when they speak with you in that tone or how you feel when they treat you in that way, and reaching a mutual agreement about changes that you expect to see and results that that you expect.
Yeah, and playing ostrich isn't going to make it go away. Sometimes we think, oh, if I just avoid this situation, it'll go away. Hello? No, it just gets worse. So it's better to just have a little pain now and solve the pain that's going to just grow later on. And I love your example and the empowerment that, you know, was really a benefit to both of you. And I know that we're going to – so the challenge today for everybody listening, okay, live or on replay, if you have a jerk that you're working with, you have to take Sue's advice and do that, which she just suggested in confronting. And we have to talk. Can we talk?
And I think, too, I think equally as important is to look at ourselves first, because, you know, we have to change ourselves first. Look at ourselves first and say, hold on a sec, before I can talk about other jerks, am I a jerk?
Yeah. That always helps, too.
You know, maybe I'm a jerk. Maybe people are avoiding me because, oh, my goodness, maybe I'm the one who's a jerk. So
yeah.
Look at yourself first. Number one, always see what you can do to improve yourself first. And maybe changes that we make as ourselves can affect changes in others. But please don't misunderstand. I'm not putting flowers on everybody who's a jerk. But the first thing we need to do is say, hold on, am I a jerk? Could I change my behavior here? And,
yeah.
And, you know, it takes two to make change.
Absolutely. Well, you've definitely inspired good change in all of us today. I can't believe we're at the end of the show. And I want to make sure that everybody has your website and how to contact you and get more of all these great, fresh thoughts that help us be our best and be civil. I mean, we deserve it. We're worth it. So how do people get in touch with you?
My website is www.thecivilityceo.com. That's thecivilityceo.com. My name is Sue Jakes, and all my contact information is on the website. I would love to hear from anybody who has a question or a comment or would just like to chat. It would be fun.
Well, I'm speaking, I'm sure, for all of us listening. It's just been a great, fresh feeling of empowerment, and thank you for the work that you're doing. And it's just amazing how you went from forensics into entrepreneur for civility, but we're glad that you did. And, you know, change can only happen if we have good mentors and people that are speaking with authenticity and passion and enthusiasm, and new behaviors can only occur with new thoughts. And you have a lot of them. I mean, we could have gone on and on for another show. You'll have to come back and tell us more.
Well, thank you. As I say to people, this is my life after death, and I'm enjoying every moment of it, and whatever I can do to help reverse rudeness and create courteous cultures, that is why I am here. I love helping people gain confidence and earn respect.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you for being a blessing and, you know, continue to be a blessing to help so many others, because you're doing a great job and a great service. So we appreciate you, and thank you for being with us today. So thanking the listeners, if you have anybody that needs to hear this message, it's a great gift that you can give them by forwarding this link or downloading the show on iTunes to your mobile device. You can be at the gym listening to Sue on the go and recycling all these great mind vitamins. And thank you for being here, because you're making the show great. We're just at about 10,000 listeners now, so that is a huge accomplishment for a show that's only been around since September. So I want to thank you for doing that, because you guys are doing it. It's not me. You guys are here, and I appreciate it. So go out, make it a great day, apply these tools that you can use to be your best, share with others, because we all help each other, and make it a great day. And remember, as Oscar Wilde says, be yourself, because everybody else is already taken. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Best People We Know radio show with your host, Deb Scott. For more on Deb and her guests, plus her award-winning guidebook to transformation, The Sky is Green and the Grass is Blue, Turning Your Upside-Down World Right Side Up, go to Deb's website, greenskyandbluegrass.com. You can also connect with Deb for coaching or speaking, and sign up for Deb's free Mind Vitamin newsletter while you're there. So now, you're one step closer today to your greatness. We look forward to being with you next time on the Best People We Know radio show.